apologize in advance. And may it please the court, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your time today. My name is Michael Strong, and I represent Mr. Vu Bo, who happens to be in the court here today with us. This case is a case of insurance policy construction and application of facts to ambiguous language in the policy. It is also a case that if given the reasonably objective expectations of both the insured and insurer, must provide coverage under a variety of facts. Remember that this is an insurance policy. It's not a specific contract on a specific event between two parties who part company afterwards over a very isolated transaction. This is a broad form policy. It's intended to apply to millions of different types of tortious conduct that could occur incident to or arising out of the use of an automobile. This court is probably one of the best developed in terms of the case law that you have determined in the context of auto liability insurance. You have some of the best developed case law in the country in this jurisdiction.
And do you want us to extend it to be even more favorable to recovery?
Actually not. I intend to show you today, Your Honor, that in fact the language in this policy is analogous to your existing auto liability case law, which indeed provides broad definition of the language at issue here. And just as an example, there is a case in this jurisdiction, excuse me, there's a case called Breadball, which provides that even conduct that's merely incidental is deemed a connection. That's a respondeat superior case. I don't want to misstate that that's an insurance case, but it is a respondeat superior case, which Your Honor was asking about the standard for vis-a-vis the commuting exception earlier. But there are also cases such as Blossom versus Rhodes, which requires a factual assessment as to whether the use of a car or the particular facts of an agency relationship existed in order to impose tort liability. Here, I want to speak to the questions asked earlier today about what was this gentleman doing other than commuting. First, he did work at home. Consider, there's a federal court case out of the Eastern District of Virginia where a sailor reports to the ship for roll call, does no work, he just checks in. Then he gets in his personal auto, leaves the ship, and drives off to another duty station to perform his job. In that Wells versus United States case, it clearly states that that commute between two workplaces, even though there was next to nothing done at the check-in moment, is enough to establish that that trip is within the course and scope of employment.
Was that was a Federal Tort Claims Act case, right?
It certainly was, but it relies on underlying tort principles in order to resolve the issue, and agency principles of the issue, the factual issue of whether he's
engaged in the course. Is there any Virginia case where an employer's liability policy covers an employee, or in this case a partnership and a partner, when they're commuting and nothing else is in the record? Is there a single case coming anywhere near that?
Yes.
I think, okay, which ones?
All right. The case I would point you to begin with, is Bryant versus Bear. In the Bryant versus Bear case, we had an employer who happened to be the owner of a small business. Stops by the restaurant and picks up the garbage and then drives home. That's all they did. They weren't working all day. At the end of the day, they didn't haul the garbage out and put it in the back of the pickup truck. No. They just went to the store, restaurant, picked up the garbage, drove home. In that case,
with the garbage in the car?
The garbage was in the pickup truck.
Transporting the garbage. They're not commuting.
Garbage is equivalent to cell phone use. and monitoring of cell phone. That's,
I think a lot of people would say that.
Yeah. I certainly say it about email.
Does simply having your cell phone on equal monitoring the cell phone? I've never heard that term before.
If your employer expects you to be on duty and monitor that phone to take incoming calls related to business, yes.
But is it being
on? So my employer may intend that during all of my waking hours, I'm available by cell phone. That's monitoring my cell phone?
Well, there are cases that say, no, that's not enough. And there's one particular one out of Massachusetts that Mr. McGavin cited. And I would happen to agree with it, believe it or not. But it's distinguishable from our facts. Here we have, he was expected to start work at a regular hour of 9 a.m. in the morning and work all the way through 5 o'clock. That was his expectation of employment. Testified to by both the employer representative, Mr. Bizzio, and Mr. Bartolomucci. And during that period of time, he actually did work by getting the voicemail, calling in, checking the voicemail through the email system and so forth. And then he took that cell phone, and very carefully he testified, through his own recollection of this particular trip, turned it on, put it in the cup holder, and with the clear expectation that he would answer it. Next point.
Can I stop you right there? How is that any different from being on call?
Being on call.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
and I think there's some cases out there that say that's not good enough.
Because he also testified that it was his regular habit to use that time for his employer's benefit by analyzing his cases in his mind on the drive to work. Now,
but he wasn't doing it that day.
Well, okay, but your cases on agency also don't say that you have to be engaged in the specific act that intentionally benefits the employer at the time of the tort in order for you to be within the course and scope
of employment. But the problem is, this is not a respondent superior case. The jury instruction was he using his automobile in the furtherance of the firm's affairs?
Exactly. And
not whether he was using his laundry room or his bathroom or his basement or his office in his home or his home at all. Who cares what he's doing in his home?
But look at the Taylor versus Robinson case, a Supreme Court case in Virginia, in the workers' comp context, which again deals with the same issue, which I think you're having the difficulty with, is isn't this a carve-out for going and coming, which is an exclusion to the scope of employment test, which is codified into the workers' comp law, but nonetheless relies on the same general principle of agency. And this case, Taylor versus Robinson, says that when the worker moves from one location to another, this happened to have been a car dealer, he had two locations, and the employee stopped in at one place very briefly and then drove to another place. But on his way to the other place of work of the employer, he stopped at home for lunch. And the court held, indeed, this was a correct factual finding, that he was within the scope and course of his employment. This is the commute between work sites and an incidental digression. And that is exactly the same principle that we have in this case.
Except workers' comp is a broader test.
Well, it actually, if you listen to Mr. McGavin has been arguing throughout that workers' comp is the test.
No, his argument is, workers' comp, even under the broad test, you lose. So all the more you'd lose under a debt.
Well, here's why we win, though. Because all of that deals with business use of the auto. Here we also have in this policy personal use of an auto. That is an expressly covered set of occurrences or uses of
the vehicle. So you also believe the person there, the you in that sentence, means the employee or the partner, not the firm?
Are we going to hold that businesses are people too? That's what you're asking us to do? No, that's not the law.
Well, businesses
here's
are
what
people.
People are. People are people. People are human beings. And so when an employer says we want coverage for our people is what we're talking about. And those people have people needs.
So the firm is not covered by you because you means a homo sapien?
Well, no, I'm not going into the you clause in terms of who's the named insured. I'm saying who are the people who are allowed to use autos under the policy and be covered. So it's obviously the law firm can't drive a car. So why would we have an insurance policy for a car at all if we didn't insure the people who work for the employer who are doing the driving for them? Because the employer can't drive to the Supreme Court to argue today. They're not here in person. They're here through their representative employees. That's the distinction we have to draw here. And personal use is a far broader test than business use. Why? Mr. Bizio admitted, using the concept of Massey v. Firmstone, that the personal use language of this policy included the hypothetical use of a wife who goes to a retreat at the homestead, and while her husband is in a seminar at the homestead, goes off on a personal joyride to go horseback riding. Now, horseback riding has nothing to do with the law firm. But Mr. Bizio said, yep, it's personal connection to the employer. That was the hypothetical, and they're bound by it. I didn't introduce it. It wasn't on cross-examination. It was direct testimony in answer to Mr. McGavin's hypothetical.
Well, I would imagine most named insurers would say that to cover their employees. But we don't normally, and the law has never allowed people to offer expert opinions on the language of a contract that allegedly is unambiguous. That's a question of law for the court.
But no. I believe that the law is that ambiguity requires that we engage in a factual analysis.
So unlike your colleagues, you think this language is ambiguous. You think its language is ambiguous.
Absolutely. And we argued that in the trial court. I heard earlier argument that indeed nobody raised the issue of ambiguity. Yes, we did. Ms. Snee almost bought herself a ticket out of the courtroom after repeating it so many times. But honestly, there is ambiguity in this policy because there are cases throughout the United States that hold that companies are not people, and therefore personal affairs cannot refer to the company business. It's got to be something other than that. And so what is it here? What is the personal use I'm claiming here? I'm sure you'd all like to know. Well, it's Mr. Bartolomucci going from his home on the way to the baseball game. And what was the baseball game? It was a company-condoned social event where he was going to mix with judges and lawyers and talk about business incidental and build the reputation of the firm in a nice social affair. And that's exactly what that personal affairs language refers to. And he was going there. And that's exactly, back to the hypothetical of Mr. Bizio, like the wife going to the seminar with her husband.
Well, Cass, let me interrupt you one second. Based upon your logic, is there anything that's not covered?
Absolutely.
Well, tell me what it would be, because it sounds like not
going to the grocery store. The cases, Mr. McGavin did a good job of citing them all. Even the FAM case. If you're out for a night of drinking, you are not covered. And that's everywhere. There are five different cases in five jurisdictions.
Well, the thing I don't understand is when you say your personal affairs is not related to the personal affairs of the firm, who is it? You're saying it's the insured, and if that's the case...
Your personal affairs does relate to the personal affairs of the firm. What are the personal affairs, though?
Okay.
A baseball game is a personal affair because it isn't directly related to the business of the company. It's intended to foster the goodwill and relationship of its employees with other coworkers in it. Social environment. That's what a personal affair is.
You're driving to the bar and the boss says, be sure, Arthur, that you keep your cell phone on because we might need to talk about tomorrow's trial.
And there is a case, actually, which says that an employee who drives to a bar and the employer pays for the drinks at the bar, even though he's off, you know, in the evening with his coworkers on a trip.
My employer wouldn't pay for my drinks. Suppose I paid for my own drinks, but I was still clear that I had to answer that cell phone. You say that would be covered?
If you're in a bar after work, I mean, not during the expected hours of employment, it would be a far closer case to what Mr. McGavin is arguing, but that is not our case. Here we have a man going from his home office where he did work, to his business office, where he was going to do more work. And that is the Taylor v. Robinson case, where they stop for lunch on the way to work, between work sites, and they're still covered and within the scope of agency.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. McGavin.
May it please the Court again. I'm John McGavin. I'm here on behalf of Hogan Lovells and Federal. Is it permissible, or may I ask, Your Honor, if I may adopt my previous arguments, or should I go through again? These cases, I don't believe, are consolidated.
Under the circumstances, you come up on the same record, you can adopt.
I adopt, then, Your Honor, my previous arguments. I would like to correct the record regarding the facts that were developed in the trial. It's been suggested that Mr. Bartolomucci was on his way to the baseball game when the accident occurred. The facts are he was on his way to his office. He was not on his way to a baseball game. So this is a commuting case. It's also been suggested that he did work at home. He did not bill for anything he did at home. He could not identify any legal work he did other than he called the office because he got an email about a voicemail, and the content of that voicemail was never identified. So other than those items and any other questions that the Court may have.
I have one question, yes, with regard to the line of cases. If I'm going from one work location, one office location, to another office location, that commute is covered. Would you agree?
I agree, and that's consistent with the workers' compensation cases. There's a nurse's case where...
And so obviously the argument here is that we should extend that legal principle to someone who has a home office, and so they are going from their home office to their regular office. And tell me why that should not apply.
Well, it could apply if the record was sufficiently developed. And that would put us into an analysis much like is talked about in the GATX Tank Erection Company case, 1980, which talks about a variety of things that are provided by the employer to make the travel part of the employer's business. So I would suggest that we'd have to get into an analysis of who pays for the home office, is it required, and some of the things that I think I may have mentioned in response to Justice Millett's question. So I think that factual record would have to be developed. Could it be under the right circumstance? Yes, the world is changing with telecommuting and how we do work from home and web-based offices. But this was not the circumstance on this record, and I submit they failed to produce the evidence, and that's why the motion to strike was appropriate. Unless there are...
Can I ask you one final question?
Yes.
Mr. McGavin, as again a follow-up of our conversation about the kinds of factors that might come into a situation where commuting might be included. One way to limit coverage is the language of the coverage. Another way is the language of an exclusion. Why wouldn't that be appropriate in this kind of case?
Well, if they want to make those exclusions, I think as time evolves and these issues come up, that's probably coming. But right now, there is no case that says commuting is covered that I can find. No court of this level has said commuting is covered. And even the cases which are just Westlaw cases, as far as I read them, except for one cited by the opposition, they don't say commuting's covered. They say personal affairs provision of the policy may be ambiguous. We have case law on the other side, including a case from Florida that says commuting is not covered under this policy, which we've cited. I don't mean to run from this argument, but having a second opportunity, I don't want to overstay my welcome.
Thank you very much. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All rise.